how are you today? I'm Natalie and welcome to my brand new podcast, Yellow Bee Pod. In this podcast, we'll be sharing the highs and the lows of East and Southeast Asian diaspora. Where is East and Southeast Asia, I hear you ask? East Asia includes countries like China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, South Korea, and more. Southeast Asia includes countries like Philippines, Malaysia, Vietnam, Cambodia, and loads more as well. People from East and Southeast Asian descent live all over the world, and living in a country that is different from your own ethnicity or cultural heritage comes with its own challenges. Trust me, as a British-born Chinese person, I know. So yeah, this is a podcast all about the highs and the lows of East and Southeast Asian diaspora, people who are based somewhere that isn't necessarily their homeland. I want to shine a light on this group because I rarely hear stories and I know a lot of incredible Asians that deserve a platform. So it could be sharing anything from inspirational achievements to everyday experiences. I spend a lot of my own time listening to podcasts, and starting my own is something I've been thinking about for over a year now. But I thought this is finally the time to do it, and it's my birthday later this month, so it's kind of like a birthday present to myself. In this episode, I'm chatting to my younger sister about our ethnic identity growing up. I think a lot of people can relate to our experiences of not being quite sure where we fit in. And we really dive into our different experiences growing up and where we feel like we fit in now. So I hope you enjoy this episode. If you want to connect with us, you can follow the podcast on Instagram and Twitter at yellowbeepod. And you can also email in yellowbeepod@gmail.com. I would actually really love to hear, firstly, if anyone's listening to this, hello. Please let us know. I would love to hear that you are listening to this podcast. And secondly, if you have any experiences or stories that you want to share about your own growing up or your own ethnic identity, yeah, please get in touch. I would love, love, love to hear that. Yeah, let's get into the episode, into the conversation, and I hope you enjoy. Hello, thanks for joining me. This is my first episode. I'm joined by my younger sister, Jessica Garley.
Hi, everyone.
So both of us are in the UK where it's currently a lockdown situation, or I like to call it lock-in.
I feel like it's come at a good time where I can just like take a step back and like make the most of the time by doing activities that I always said that I wanted to do but never actually got around to. So
yeah, so just before this call, my sister played I'm Yours by Jason Mraz on the ukulele, yeah. Which is a brand new skill that you've learned since we started.
Why are you laughing? What's funny?
It's just random. Like, you've never played an instrument like that before and you've just decided out of nowhere that you're going to order a ukulele, and it's fine. So both of us are in different places, even though we technically live together and we're probably going to be separated for the next however long this lasts. And we're currently recording this over Zoom, and my sister was making fun of my Zoom backgrounds. I had a great Zoom background of Destiny Child, where I am Beyonce.
God, but take off this stupid background. How can I talk to you about my life's deepest problems when you look like that?
So today the topic of the podcast, the first episode, is how British are you? This is something we've spoken about a little bit in the past.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting topic because we were born in England. We live in around London, where it's quite ethnically diverse. It's difficult to know where we fit in, like whether we feel Chinese or whether we feel more British or whether we feel like we fit in with different communities. Yeah, so it's quite interesting comparing our experience to other people.
Yeah, and I should say that even though I call Jessica my little sister, we're actually really close in age. It's like 1 year, 1 month and 1 week. That's what I always tell people, but is that right? I don't know. I've always said that. And we're really close in age. So you were the year below me at school, and actually most of our experiences growing up have been the same. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how British are you?
Actually, compared to, I have a lot of Indian friends that were brought up living around other Indian people. So I would say I'm a lot more white or a lot more British than they are. So, for example, I've introduced into a lot of typically white things that they wouldn't have experienced. Stuff like going to Toby Carvery. It's such a random thing, but people have never heard of Toby Carvery, and then they try it and they love it. Because there's one in Loughborough, but no one has actually heard of it or been there, but they love it now, like a roast dinner. Like, that's not really a thing. They know that white people have like a Sunday roast.
That is such a random thing to bring up, because I feel like Toby Carvery, or just Carveries at the weekend, were quite a big part of our childhood.
Yeah, so I think a lot of that is because our dad was born here, so he had quite a British upbringing, so I guess maybe he went through the first generation, whereas we're having like the second generation experience.
Yeah, I kind of get confused when people say like first generation, second generation. But normally when I have these conversations with, they decide, or we decide, that I'm like a 1.5 generation.
Yeah,
because I thought that's what... our dad is British born Chinese and our mum immigrated here, so it's like in the middle of one and two. We're 1.5.
it's true, because even like the way that mum brought us up, it wasn't even though she came over to England when she was 18 or 19.
Was she that young?
Yeah.
Really? Damn.
19, 20 at most.
I actually thought she was in her mid-20s. Wow, that shows how much I know. So you don't know how British you are on a scale of 1 to 10. But
as a number, I would say, wait, so what would be 5? On a scale of 1 to 10.
5 would be like you think you're half Asian and half English.
I would say I'm 8 out of 10.
You know what? I would say the same.
8.
And was there a point where you were growing up when you realised, like, oh, I'm Chinese?
Not really. I think when we were growing up, we had, like, more of the whole Chinese-ness, like drinking yong sui. And
what's that? Oh, God. I don't know how to translate that.
Like, it's like herbal soup.
Oh, yeah.
That is made with, like,
herbs.
And plant, like, random expensive plants. Like, I remember mum telling us that some plant was like £20 to buy, and that was just one ingredient, so we have to finish the soup and then we just pour it out the window.
I don't know whether it actually cost that much or whether she was just saying that because she wanted us to drink it. True. For our own health, for our own good.
But I wouldn't actually be surprised if it did cost that much, because it is like Chinese plants, so I don't know how common.
And we did throw it out the window. Also, we poured it into the pot plants because we really didn't want to drink it. You know what? I always said that you know, at uni, or like when you're doing pre-drinks and stuff and you have to down your drink, like the taxi's coming or in a game, or I always said that I learned that skill, being able to down drinks that I really didn't want to drink from drinking long sleep as a kid.
I'm really bad at doing that, downing my drink, to be honest. Well, actually, when I was in first year at uni, I was definitely much better. But now,
I believe it's all in the mind. Like, if you look at it and say, that's not vodka lemonade, it's just lemonade, you can just drink it quicker. Okay, I know it's disgusting, but... So for me, there wasn't really a point where I knew, oh, I'm Chinese, but there was definitely a point where I felt like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be Chinese, and I don't fit into that. So for me, that like was in secondary school, and I started dating a guy who went to a different school. He was half Chinese and half white British, and I felt like he was more Chinese than me. Most of his friends at college were Chinese, and he was more in touch with like the culture and the food, even though he was half English and white. And that was really weird for me, because I always felt pretty comfortable in my identity until that point. And from then until present day, it has just been a whole journey of me trying to figure out, where do I actually fit in? How do people see me? And also, who do I actually want to be?
I get that, because I think we weren't really brought up around many Chinese people. Even though we did go to Chinese school, mum wasn't really friends with the parents of those children. And just in general, I don't really remember being brought up with Chinese friends. So I think that's where the gap is.
Oh, God. Yeah, Chinese school. So for those of you who don't know, Chinese school is a place where you go at the weekend. For us, it was on Sunday afternoons. And we went to a Chinese school in Greenwich where they would teach you Mandarin. So it was all a big like language and culture school. And I hated it. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all, to be honest.
We don't speak Mandarin at home. We were learning Mandarin from scratch. And then sometimes in the class, they would just be speaking Mandarin to each other, and including with the other students. And we were just there like, no idea what's going on.
Chinese school was a good experience. I'm glad I had that, because a lot of people talk about their Chinese school experience when they were younger. And I feel like if we didn't go to Chinese school, then we'd feel really far apart from the Chinese community. So at least we did have that.
You know, it's really common. So I found out recently there's like Vietnamese schools, Japanese schools, Spanish schools, Jewish schools, all of these schools where people go to like learn about their own culture. I think it is important. But it's interesting that we both feel like we didn't have that Chinese community growing up. But we did go to Chinese school, so we were part of this Chinese community.
Actually, I think because like we didn't really live near any Chinese people, but then like Chinese people in the UK are so dispersed that there really isn't one place, apart from like London, there really isn't any one place where they kind of all live.
I thought that as well. I was like, well, okay, London has a big Chinese community, but then when I went to university in Manchester, there's a big Chinese community there. There's also a big one in Liverpool and a big one in Birmingham.
In Liverpool?
Yeah, and that's just the cities that I know. But obviously, if you aren't part of that community, you wouldn't necessarily know. We live sort of in the suburbs of London, sort of where London meets the county of Essex. And I looked on Wikipedia before we had this call. Wikipedia says that Essex is 90.8% white British. 90.8%, okay, so like 91%.
That's Essex.
Yeah, Essex.
Okay.
Essex has an estimated population of 1.8 million. And 2.5% of those are Asian. I don't know when this census was taken or where they got these numbers from, but that's what Wikipedia's reporting, so we're taking that as truth. But obviously 2.5% Asian, I mean, that doesn't just mean East Asian, it means all the different countries within Asia, and Asia's a big place.
And I reckon half of those people live in Ilford.
Specifically Ilford. Yeah, it's true. There's a big South Asian population there. And so looking at those numbers, it's no surprise that we didn't feel like we were in the big Chinese community. I'm always really jealous when I talk to other Chinese people who had loads of cousins and aunties and uncles around who were also part of a bigger Chinese community. Even if they're not actually like blood related, they still call them like aunties and uncles. I think there's a few cultures that do that. Yeah, I always feel really jealous because I didn't feel that way growing up at all. And remember when we went to school, I was thinking about trying to think about how many Chinese people there were in my year. And there actually were some, because we had some foreign students from China, from Taiwan, maybe Hong Kong, and other Asian countries as well, like Korea and Russia. But yeah, not a very ethnically diverse school. Can you remember what it was for your year group?
So in my year group, I think there was myself and maybe two other Chinese, or I think Chinese Malaysian, but then that's about it in terms of East Asians in the year. But then that only increased when I was in sixth form, where again, yeah, there were students from East Asia that came as international students just for those last 2 years. That was the only time where it kind of increased.
How about at uni? So we both went to universities in different places and kind of really different environments. So I was based in Manchester, it's a big city. And as I said, there's a big Chinese community in the Northwest.
Yeah, I went to university in Loughborough, so that's in the Midlands. It's like a medium-sized town between Nottingham and Leicester.
It's a tiny town.
It's not too bad. The subjects that it's good at is sports-related, which is why a lot of people do come to Loughborough. When I first joined, it was like a lot more white than it is now. So now it's about 7 years later. I have noticed there is a lot more diversity at the uni.
You think that was deliberate? Like the uni was deliberately trying to recruit?
I think because when I applied to uni, Loughborough was very like up and coming. Whereas now it's quite a lot high on the ranking. So like people just are noticing it more. Like Asians want to go to good uni, and their parents want them to go to good uni.
And something interesting that we've both noticed about our university experiences is that we ended up mainly hanging out with like ethnic minority groups, but particularly South Asian groups, so like Indian Pakistani or like British Indian, British Pakistani, etc. I've never really figured out how this happened.
My friendship group it wasn't really that much South Asian, but it only became more South Asian when I started doing bhangra dancing. It was in my second year of uni. So in my first year, my group of friends was kind of a good mix. There was like some white, some East Asian, South Asian, mixed race, black. So it was like a real mix in my first year. But there weren't many Chinese people or East Asian people at my uni. And there were, that I came across in terms of like the societies, like the course, or even like clubbing. Didn't really come across many East Asians. So, but there is a community, but a lot of them are master's students.
There must have been a lot of Asian students, because especially like Chinese international students, they make up a huge population at pretty much every uni across the UK, right? I feel like they're a big source of income because international students pay such ridiculously high fees.
Yeah, I think it's more of a case in that the city university, because if you're going to come over from far away, you're going to choose to live in a city or like a well-known university. Your uni was a lot bigger as well.
Yeah, it's massive. Plus in Manchester, there's another uni literally on the same road. So there's the Uni of Manchester, and then there's also Manchester Met, as well as a music college, all on the same road. So you mentioned Bhangra dancing. For anyone listening who doesn't know, my sister is a really, really good Bhangra dancer. And Bhangra is from North India. Yeah? Am I getting this right?
It's from Punjab, so that's in North India. And yeah, I got involved with the Bhangra Society when I was in second year, and then started doing competition. So
it's honestly the most random hobby. If you think back to when you're at sixth form or secondary school, you would never have thought that you would end up in that circle. But because it takes up so much of your time, and also it's a big part of your social life, so it makes sense that you had a lot of Indian friends.
I've learned a lot about the Punjabi or just like Indian community in the UK, which is so much bigger than the Chinese community. I think it's strengthened as well because religion is a large part of Indian culture. So they have like a place where they congregate and spend time and get to know other people in their community, whereas we don't really have that. I think mum was Buddhist, but she didn't really practice it. So even now, I don't really know much about Buddhism.
Yeah, that's true. I think the religious centres, they like create a centre for the community. Well, I think mum did have that a bit. So our mum went to church quite a lot during our teen years. It was one of the churches near the Chinatown in London. So, and I think it was a Chinese church. So there's a big community around that. But I wouldn't really know, like, what are the big religions for like East Asians or for Chinese? Is it Christianity that's the biggest? I really don't know.
Well, I don't want to say something stupid.
Yeah, I don't want to say something stupid too. I think we both of us need to shut up, and then we can get an expert on who actually knows what they're talking about. So most of your time at uni, you were hanging out with Indian and British Indian people. I spent a lot of time at uni with like third culture kids. So they're people who, wait, let me get this right. Third culture kids are people who they're raised in a country or a culture that is different from their ethnicity or their parents' culture or their nationality. And that makes a big difference when you're growing up because they're like your formative years. I also spent a lot of time hanging out with international school kids who had gone to schools all around the world. And it was usually because they were moving countries a lot because they were following their parents' like career and jobs. Their experiences are kind of more wild than ours because their accent might not match up with where they spent most of their teen years, might not match up with their nationality, or like their actual passport might not match up with where their parents are. And it was interesting because they were all so, not complicated, that's not the right word, but they had lots of different cultures and ethnicities built into their identity. I was like the most simple basic. They used to call me basic. And I was also considered the most white of a group that I was in, just because I was born in the UK, grew up in the UK. And I think Essex comes into that as well. And someone once referred to me as like the token white girl of the group, which was really, really, really weird. Can you remember any experiences of racist comments when you were growing up?
I think the first time that I actually experienced racism was on MSN. So MSN's like an instant messaging tool that we use, well, most people used for quite a few years, to be honest. Maybe 5 or 6 years, it was like the main way to communicate. This was before we had like data on our phones and unlimited text messages. That wasn't a thing back then. So MSN was the way. So I was in year 7 or year 8 maybe, and I added one of the popular girls from year from my primary school, and then she called me a chink. Must have been a group chat because I wouldn't have messaged her one-on-one. Started abusing me, calling me a chink. I don't know what I said back. I think growing up, when I was in secondary school, my group of friends was very ethnically diverse as well. You mentioned that our school was like pretty white. They experienced racism in a lot harsher way than I did. Even now, that they kind of have like PTSD from their experience at school. So one of my friends was saying how some of the popular boys would be walking past and like kind of gagging as they walk past, like basically to say that she's disgusting. And that they would basically make references to her being a cleaner, saying that like, you should clean my house or something like that. And
no way. I don't know anyone who has a cleaner.
So she's Saudi Arabian.
There are a lot of cleaners who are Saudi Arabian.
I think they thought she was Spanish or like South American or something. I don't think they knew. Well, maybe they did know. So there was a lot of like name calling and racist remarks said to like my friendship group. I think I was just oblivious to it. I don't know how or why, but thank God, because my friends be traumatized by that experience a bit. So one of my friends, I remember this happening. So we were in year 10 or year 11, And they were experiencing racist remarks quite a lot. So she went to the head of year and told her, explained everything, said the types of words that these other children were saying. And the head of year told her to ignore it. Just said, just look the other way, walk away and ignore it. And I'm just thinking, imagine that happened now. Like if someone went to the head of year and said that these racist remarks, they wouldn't say just ignore it. That would be horrible if they said that.
It is horrible, but I think it still happens.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think the teachers are just like, don't pick up a fuss, and they sort of put it on the like ethnic minority teenagers to be like, you just gotta deal with it. It's not your fault, but I'm not gonna make it a bigger thing by, I don't know, what would they do? Like, what would you want them to do?
Say in an assembly or something that this is not acceptable. We are not accepting it, and have threaten or have disciplinary action for that sort of stuff. So they know how serious it is. Because for the children at the moment, it's just like a silly mark. Like, they don't think anything of it. But if they know that there's discipline attached to that, then they'll see it as a more serious thing. They can't be growing up saying, like, thinking it's fine to say these things. Because in the workplace or anywhere else, you can't just say these things. They can't be brought up to think that that's okay.
Well, yeah, so you would hope. But it's not just having disciplinaries. It's also to make sure that they understand, like, why they shouldn't be saying racist slurs. But there's definitely still racism at school. So did you see the video recently from the BBC? So with all the COVID-19 stuff going on, obviously originated in China, and that actually resulted in a lot of racism towards Chinese or even people who get mistaken for being Chinese. And that there's like primary school kids, so kids who are super, super young and just like innocent, who are being called like racist slurs or being accused of being sick or causing COVID-19. And then they go home and they say, I don't want to be Chinese anymore. Isn't that the most sad thing? So that was a video that came out and was put on by the BBC. So it definitely still exists. And I actually had it in primary school. So growing up, I didn't really clock that some things were race related at all, even though it is pretty common for people to get bullied when they're kids. And it's only in this big age, like literally in the last year or last month even, that I realised that it was like race related. So for example, at the start of this call, I called you Jessica Garley, and your middle name is Garley, which is a Cantonese name. And my middle name, it begins with the same syllable. So my middle name is Garbo. And when I was in primary school, I remember I was getting teased. People would call me not Garbo, but they would call me Garbage or garlic breath, all of this like pretty rubbish stuff. And in my ignorance, I didn't really clock that that was that bad or race related. It was just sort of something I had to deal with growing up. But then thinking back, I do recognize that bullying and name calling was like race related, because if I had a more common name, i.e. a Western name or like a Christian name, it definitely wouldn't have been made fun of like that. But kids are cruel. Kids tease each other for anything. This is kind of turning into a therapy session where we're bringing up all these awful childhood memories. You know what? We've never spoken about it.
Yeah, that's true. Not in the different areas. Like, I didn't know that about your childhood. I think I got the garlic breath as well because my name is Garley.
Snap, high five. Woo! Yeah, and I didn't know anything about your friend's experiences in secondary school. But thinking back, I'm not surprised. You said something interesting before about how you know how to, in quote marks, you know how to be Indian and how you know how to be white, also in quote marks, but you don't know how to be Chinese, which is actually what you are.
A lot of that comes on to how mum didn't really bring us up with that much Chinese culture, especially as we've gotten older. So we had the whole Chinese school, drinking liang sui, getting hit, but...
Oh God, why are they like the intrinsic Chinese experiences? I don't know whether everyone has these same experiences.
But I remember we used to do Moon Day. I remember we made lanterns out of paper and we walked around the garden with, I think, like a tea light in the lantern. We did buy a lantern, then we did go to Chinatown to celebrate Chinese New Year, but our younger sister hasn't had the opportunity for any of that.
Right, so as well as Jessica, I have two other younger sisters. There's four of us all together, four girls. And you're right, I would definitely agree that we have a lot more exposure to Chinese culture than they do. So our younger sister's only 15. She's really young, but then actually a lot more switched on. I think just with like the generation that she's in, she has access to a lot more information. And if you don't have your community around you in your neighborhood or in your school, you can find it online. So you can find different groups and read about stuff online. Like, I think she's more mature than we give her credit for, just because we weren't as mature as she is now when we were her age.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And she does watch a lot of Chinese dramas.
I think they're Korean. K-pop.
No, she did say Chinese dramas as well.
Really? I haven't heard of those.
Maybe she just watched one. But she's into K-pop. Actually, that's about it.
Remember, I bought her a book. Actually, it was like a year ago. It wasn't recently. It's called Life of a Banana. And that was something that I got for her because it's quite rare to have a British Chinese author writing about a British Chinese experience. And it's written about a teenager, a school kid, from the point of view of a school kid, and talks about some of her experiences. Obviously, it's a novel and it's written for like teenagers, for young adults. Actually, I read it. The topics that it covers were quite a lot more serious than I had expected. And so I bought her this book like a year ago just so she could have it and read it if she wants. I don't think she has read the whole thing. Hopefully these sort of things will give her more exposure and to help her understand her own ethnic identity. So now this episode is coming to an end soon. I want to ask you again, how British do you think you are?
After this discussion and reminiscing about the elements of Chinese-ness that we've had growing up, I would say I'm more Chinese than I initially thought at the start of this conversation. But I think because a lot of it all happened before we were teenagers. So that's why I've kind of forgotten about it. But I do actually appreciate the little things that we did do when we were younger, with like Moon Day and Chinese New Year, and completely different experience now as an adult. I have a few Chinese friends, and I'm just a lot more aware of the lack of Chinese community that we have around us, because I've seen the strong community that British Indians have. So yeah, it makes you want to reach out and get more involved in other projects that speak about the East Asian experience in the UK. Yeah, because it's quite unique. So it's nice to hear other people's stories and how other people see themselves within their communities and the experience they've had growing up.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Over the last sort of year and a half, I've been a lot more conscious of my ethnic identity. I do think there are sort of unique experiences about being East Asian within the UK or Chinese within the UK, but then there's also some sort of shared experiences that people of other ethnicities in the UK would have. But yeah, it is important. That's all why I wanted to start this podcast. I feel like it's been bursting out of me. It's been something I've been thinking about a long time, as Jessica knows. It's important to share experiences that people might have in common, but then also experiences that are individual to individual people. And it's interesting that we are the same ethnicity, we grew up in the same place, literally the same family, same household, and we're really similar in age, but we do have different experiences. Just shows that all sort of British-born Chinese experiences are varied and they're not homogenous, and that will vary even more if you consider sort of other East Asian countries. I can feel that my ethnic identity is always changing, so I'm learning a lot from hearing about other ethnic minority people, having these conversations, whether that's people who live here in the UK or somewhere else. And I always thought that I wasn't Chinese enough, but then what I've learned recently is that there's a lot of other British-born Chinese people who feel the same way, including people who I would say are more quote-unquote Chinese than me because they speak better Cantonese or Mandarin. And so it's not just me, there are other people out there feeling the same way.
Yeah, there's certain things that I do want to improve on as I grow older, such as like ordering Chinese food at a restaurant. I've never actually done that or been able to do that in Chinese, which is quite shameful, to be honest, because when we were growing up, it was always the adults that ordered. And even now when we go out, it'll be the adults that order, but now we're adults. When loads of Indian restaurants with my friends, but I've never taken them to a Chinese restaurant and I wouldn't know how to.
Oh, maybe you should. Maybe you should take them, but maybe not the vegetarian ones, because I don't know what vegetarian Chinese food would be.
Yeah, I've had a look at that in London. There's not much vegetarian Chinese, especially not like in proper restaurants in Chinatown. More like the westernized restaurants will have like the vegan dumplings and different options. Right, yeah.
No, so I see Chinese restaurants in two categories. There's the Chinese restaurants for Chinese people, and a lot of the ones in Chinatown are for Chinese people, but then obviously people of all ethnicities go there to eat, love that. But then there's the Chinese restaurants or Asian restaurants which are designed for a wider audience, so they end up being not very authentic. And things like Wagamama's comes to mind. Gordon Ramsay has a restaurant called Lucky Cat. There's one that the Ivy has opened. These are all like pan Asian restaurants, and they have lots of different cuisines, and I mean, I do eat at them, I do love it as well, but it's not all the authentic Chinese food experience.
I guess I think we're lucky to have that we're close to London, so
yeah, that's true, we are lucky
compared to a lot of that.
Let's be grateful.
Let's learn how to make dumplings. Let's get mum to teach us to learn how to make dumplings soon.
Does mum even know how to make dumplings?
Yes, she does, but she doesn't make them because she said that we didn't like them. But that's when we were like 12.
Oh, so, I feel bad.
And now we eat everything, so I'm sure we'll like them.
Yeah, I want to learn how to make dumplings, because you remember when Crazy Rich Asians came out, and there's a scene where, even though these are all characters, all super rich in this family, and they had like chefs and stuff, but the family members still sat around and made dumplings together, and everyone was talking about how this was such like a Chinese experience, and I was like, I've never sat around with my family and made dumplings.
Yeah, I made noodles before with mum.
Really?
Yeah, but it wasn't the normal type of noodles that we have. It was a bit different. It was more like doughy pasta thing. It's like Chinese pasta, but I quite liked it, but we should make it again.
And next time we go to dim sum, I'm gonna teach you how to order 5 of our dishes, because that's all you need, really. Yeah. You just need to be able to say your 5 favorite dishes and how many you want, so you can say you want like 3 ha cheong fun. I'm sure my pronunciation is terrible, but they understand what I'm saying. The only time that would be a problem is when you have to order from the little paper sheets where they're all written, all the dishes are written in Chinese characters. But if you have that, you can still use Google Translate.
I need to make a note of the dishes that I like and actually revise them, because I think I know the words, but I just need to like...
Yeah, it doesn't come to mind.
Yeah, so I need to make a list and read it every night until I know it.
Yeah. When I was studying in Manchester, we went for Sunday dim sum, like me and a group of friends. We went so often that we actually kept a photo of a filled in sheet, so we would know like where our favourite dishes were. So we wouldn't actually be able to read the characters, but we would know where they were on the sheet, so we could order them again next time.
That's a good idea. Oh, I definitely want to have dim sum with my friends soon.
I know, especially with this lockdown, I'm craving eating out, but I'm specifically craving sashimi. Dim sum, I can wait. Actually, our mum ordered some dumplings today, so she sent in a home delivery order to our favourite Chinese supermarket. So soon we could have dumplings galore at home, and you won't be here to try them.
I miss dim sum so much. I live for dim sum, and we never have it.
Okay, Fern, thank you so much for joining on my first episode. I wouldn't have done it with anyone else. As I said, I feel like this podcast has been bursting out of me, and we've spoken a lot longer than I anticipated. Thank you again.
Thank you for having me. It was fun talking about this stuff that you really usually get to talk about, but it's worth talking to you about and talking to other people about as well. It gets me inspired to speak to my other Chinese friends about these topics.
Yes, I think we should. It's important because we all have these thoughts, but we never talk about them. Definitely not in my circles. And hopefully anyone who's listening to this, I would love for you to share your experiences as well. So whether you're British born Chinese, whatever ethnicity you are, or whatever country you live in, I would love to hear your experiences with your own ethnic identity. Even if it's something that you've never thought about before, that in itself is really interesting. So follow us on Instagram on yellowbpod, or drop us an email at yellowbpod@gmail.com. Share your experiences, and we'd love to have a chat to you about your time growing up, your ethnic identity, and how that's changing, because mine definitely is.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Thanks for listening to this. It was the first episode, so I was a bit nervous to put this out there, but thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. Again, if you want to share any of your stories or any of your thoughts about this episode, slide into my DMs on Twitter, Instagram, or over email, yellowbpod@gmail.com. That's the email. I've got another episode coming out in just a few days, so make sure you're following us on Spotify so you see when that comes out. I'll also be sharing the latest updates on Twitter and Instagram, of course. And yeah, I'll speak to you then. Thanks, everyone. Bye.